stakeholder engagement, and these would include Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. We have already developed a concept document for Women's Month for August, and we have been consulting with government stakeholders as well as civil society stakeholders. And one of the proposals there is that the theme for Women's Month would be linked to generation equality, which is a global UN campaign where the president has been requested to lead on the issue of economic justice. This is a global issue. We know also in the context of the AU under the chairship of President Ramaphosa has declared the decade 2020 to 2030 the decade of women's financial and economic inclusion. So some of these stakeholder engagements would be around the thematic areas that would be looked at in Women's Month, including GBVF, women's economic inclusion, and so on. In terms of international relations, which is on slide 29, there would be a partnership and collaboration established, and this would be able to occur through the remote means. But it's still possible to exchange in terms of good practice, even under the COVID conditions. There would, and this is an existing target in the existing APP, but then also to have multilateral and bilateral engagements. As we've indicated, there have already been a few such engagements through using webinars. In terms of program four on the rights of persons with disability, I will move straight to the targets for 2020-2021. The first one is a legislative report on the development of the Disability Rights Bill. That would be the annual target. The second one is the framework on disability rights awareness campaigns. The third is the one status report on disability inclusion in departmental strategic plans and APPs for 2021-2024. So this is usually done in collaboration across the gender, disability and youth units, even though it's listed in each of the separate programs. But also the production of an annual performance monitoring report on inclusion of persons with disabilities. In terms of Program 5, the National Youth Development, the following targets have remained unchanged. The National Youth Policy reviewed, the reports on the National Youth Policy implementation produced, the NYDA Act amendment, and these are covered in the targets, the NYDA monitoring reports, and as well as the convening of youth machineries. Some additional output indicators have been added. The shareholder performance agreement between the department and the NYDA, and then the National Youth Machinery Framework developed. In terms of the annual targets remain, it's the review, consultation, and submission for approval of the National Youth Policy. And we know that the committee has asked a number of questions around this. And we will be happy to provide further details. The production of four National Youth Policy implementation reports, the refinement, the draft NYDA Amendment Bill refined, the shareholder performance agreement between the department and NYDA signed, and then the four NYDA monitoring reports produced. The convening of four youth machineries, and then the National Youth Machinery Framework developed and consulted. Chairperson, I will now hand over to the CFO to present on the adjusted budget. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members of the Portfolio Committee and the Deputy Minister. I'm going to give a presentation on the budget reductions across programs in the department and sub-programs as initially highlighted and presented by the DM and the ADG. The budget reduction in line with the guidelines from National Treasury was mainly on goods and services. On slide number 40, the allocation of the department for goods and services prior to the reduction of the budget was 84.8 million, and the amount that has been identified by National Treasury after the department made its submission, where an amount of 10.2 million was identified, is 27.2 million. This then leaves the department with an amount of 57.6 million for implementation of the revised plans as presented by the ADG. In program one, there is no reduction of the budget. ADG made an emphasis around the reprioritization of funds to ICT to respond to the needs for provision of tools of trade for officials working from home due to COVID-19 and also strengthening our ICT environment in the department. An amount of 2.1 million has been reprioritized from sub-programs in this program to corporate services where ICT activities are taking place. Program two, an amount of 9.4 million has been identified as a reduction from the 18.5 million that was originally budgeted, and this leaves the program with an allocation of 9 million for implementation of the plans for the program. The breakdown per each sub-program is 2.7 from the management sub-program, the social empowerment and participation, 3.2 million, governance transformation, 2.7, and lastly, economic empowerment and participation, 833,000 identified. On program three, policy stakeholder coordination and knowledge management, the total amount of the budget reduction is 11.1 million, and it's been reduced from the original amount of 7.8 million, and the program is remaining with 6.7 million for the goods and services budget. The breakdown per sub-program in terms of the allocations from each sub-program is as on the slide. Sub-program management 1.1, research policy analysis 536, international relations 1.4 million, stakeholder coordination 5.2 million, and lastly, M&E 2.8 million identified. On program four, rights of persons with disabilities, an amount of 5.2 million has been identified as a reduction of the budget, and the breakdown is as follows. Management 411,000 has been reduced, advocacy and mainstreaming 3.2 million, and governance compliance 1.6 million. The program remains with 2.7 million for implementation of its plans in line with the adjusted budget. Lastly, Program 5, National Youth Development, has an allocation of 5.3 million. An amount of 1.3 million has been reduced, and the program is remaining with 3.9 million after the budget cuts. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. I suggest we leave it at that for now, but we can give some responses on the other issues if the Chairperson so wishes.
Okay. Yeah, thank you very much, DG, Acting DG, and CFO. You know, my first point of departure, Acting DG, is what you presented in your report in relation to national youth policy implementation. If you remember very well, before lockdown, there was a request from the portfolio committee that you need to extend the closing date for public comments and public participation. And the closing date was the 30th of April at that time. And by that time already there was lockdown. And lockdown, remember the president announced lockdown on the 28th of March, if I'm not mistaken. And that tells you that opportunity. And we were having a meeting with the former acting DG and the minister before, I think somewhere in March. And you see, I was approached by youth organizations that that opportunity they couldn't participate in that youth policy. So they will want the department to re-advertise it again, so that our youth, even our structures in the organization, they were saying the same thing, that they did not get enough opportunity to participate due to lockdown. Even Honorable PT in the portfolio committee last week, when we were dealing with the NYDA shortlisting, he also reminded me that, Chair, you must remember to talk to the department that they must also publish that youth policy again, so that the youth must participate. So I want to caution the department that please don't make a mistake. I even spoke to the CEO of NYDA that policy needs to be republished again and come up with a new closing date. I don't want to see the department being litigated on things that can be corrected on time. And when they are raised even before time, because also even us as honorable members, we didn't want to go to deal with a bill that you did not do a justice on it. The people that is intended to, they did not participate on it optimally. So we will request that you revise your closing date. Don't finalize that bill before you publish it again and put another closing date. I'm happy that the DM is here. That is the first one. That is very much important for us as the portfolio committee. But coming to the people living with disability, you know, the other thing that we're worried about as the portfolio committee is that, you know, organizations of disabled people have approached us many a times. In fact, I had a meeting with them, and they were concerned that it seems like we're not taking them serious, even as the portfolio committee, because it's like there are issues, we are brushing them away, and we are saying we're doing oversight over a department of women, youth, and persons with disabilities. Then I said to them, no, the decision that you have taken is that your department is going to come up with a bill on the rights of disabled people and people living with disabilities. Because if you remember in one of the meetings, we even said to the chief director, if I'm not mistaken, that why is it comfortable that we are having a white paper for all these years instead of us coming up with an act for people living with disabilities. So what we are saying as the portfolio committee is that you need to reprioritize and make it as a priority also, because I think even with the priorities, our priorities also, the people living with disabilities must be taken serious. They must not be taken as by the way, the manner in which maybe you were dealing with their things all along. That's why even when we're doing the shortlisting as the subcommittee last week, we have included persons living with disabilities. So we do have candidates who are living with disabilities in our 30 names that we have shortlisted as the subcommittee last week, because there was no way that myself and other members of the portfolio committee who are part of that subcommittee would shortlist young people without including persons with living, young people living with disabilities. So they are part of our list. So that's why we were saying to you, you need to reprioritize it. You must not drag it to 2024 or 2023. At least it must be in your priorities for 2021, so that we can see that they can also see that and be satisfied that you are dealing with their issues and you are taking them seriously. And then with when coming to issues of mass mobilization, as you were saying, Acting DG, I became worried that even there, the budget was reduced, if I heard you well. But when you were mentioning on how are you going to do your mobilization, your mass mobilization, you mentioned TV, SABS, SABC, radios, but I was worried about how are you going then to reach out to people in remote areas, like the rural areas. For a person like myself who's a born Gautengian, sometimes you will think that rural areas is what, and people who are coming from those provinces will correct you and tell you that no, Che, right deep in Zululand, those are the areas that we're talking about, and so on. And we are worried that it seems like we are not reaching out to them, and we take it that even yourself, you take it that everybody's got TV, everybody's got a radio, but it's not like that. The truth is, there is a need that we must devise a strategy on how are you going to reach out to those people there. Even talking to issues of, you see the DM, I was happy when the DM was presenting in her open political statement that she presented to us, that, you know, in Lusikisiki, the way people, things are happening there, and the way they are treating things, and she was also, all the things that she was saying, I was like, yeah, this is reality, you know, so I think the awareness and trying to educate our people in some of the things, it's important. We even raise it with the CGE also, that the CGE also must reach out to the people in the rural areas. And you know, the other thing that is problematic is because when we also talk to media, we talk English. So the message does not reach the person that is... it's like we are thinking for people who are elite, academics, and so on. But in reality, Uguti, the poor people don't get this message. And if you can check the in terms of percentages of check people who are educated and who've got all these other benefits, and vis-a-vis the people who are poor, you know, you find that that's why even when you go to townships sometimes, they behave as if COVID is not there. You know why? It's because we always communicate in English. But if we can change and talk to our people in the languages that they understand, the message will be clear and loud. So I think because you, your department, you are dealing with all these vulnerable groups, we will request you as a department to find a way on how are you going to reach out to our people, talk to them in a language that they will understand, Acting DG, because I think it's important. You know, some of the things that are happening outside, we take it for granted that but we said it, Mr. The President has spoken, but the President is speaking in English. You know, and the ministers are speaking in English. Even us as members of parliament, we are speaking in English. And you know, the message does not reach out to the ears of ordinary citizens who have never got an opportunity to go to school and to understand these things. But for us who lived there in the townships, who experienced what is poverty, who lived poverty, who understand the background and the situations and the environment where our people are living in, I think it's high time that we need to change the manner in which we do things and try to speak to our people in the language. In each and every province, they are using different languages. And I'm sure even our constitution, it allows us, it permits us to use an any language, whether it's Sepedi. You know, yesterday when I attended a memorial service for Limpopo, the comrade who passed on, who was the PEC member of the Women's League, is from Vembe. And I cannot speak a Venda. So what I've done as their leadership, I asked other NDC members who speak Venda so that they can be able to speak in that memorial service, because their message must go to the people who are living there. Me, I cannot speak the language, and I can't even go there. I will say what in English, because they won't even hear whatever a message I was sending to them. So I think this is something that you need to take into consideration. But the other one was the wage bill. You know, there are bills that we've been asked, even by our leadership in strategy, on what bills are in parliament, because we're being told bills are in parliament, but where in parliament? Because we take it that if there is any bill in parliament, the bill, the speaker will refer to the portfolio committee. But what I know is that there were bills that last in the previous term. So what this department, your department, was supposed to do was resuscitate those bills and bring them back to parliament. So I think that one, especially the one of wage bill, and I don't know which other one, and they were talking about another bill that I've never even heard of, but I think you are in a rightful position. You know which bills last in the previous term, and so that you can help us, because we are also under pressure from our leadership, political committee of parliament, that we need to move with those bills, so that we know exactly which bills is your department prioritizing. And then with regards to the NSP and the criteria, I think the other thing, the other complaint that we have received, that your department, when you invite people for your meetings, it's like the previous stakeholders, whether NPOs or NGOs, I'm not familiar which one is in NPO or NGO, I don't know, ne? But your invitation, I think it's selective. So if you can just assist us and improve, because I'm the chairperson of the portfolio committee, I don't invite stakeholders. So I wouldn't know if we are having webinar meetings, whether we have invited them, whether you have asked also the social development, which NGOs or whatever, I don't know. So I can't even talk about those things. So what we're requesting, include everybody, you know, so that at least you cover your backs. Like us, you know, when we were dealing with the process, there were people who wanted to raise things that are unfounded. Because when we were dealing with the NYTA process, we tried our level best, you know, to follow processes accordingly. So even yourselves, you must do that, because I don't want to receive letters that are complaining when I'm not even part. We don't even know as a portfolio committee. And even other parties, when they're raising concerns with us, then it becomes a problem for us, because we don't know how to respond, because we're not the one who are inviting people for yourself. So include everyone, so that even when you identify stakeholders, NGOs or NPOs of people that are going to participate in the drafting of your criteria and so on, and the terms of reference and so on, at least you know what we have invited everyone, everybody participated. Nobody will say we were selective and so on. So I think those are the things that I wanted to raise with you. coming to sanitary dignity products, as you were presenting, yeah, you're right, because the schools were closed. And you see, we were worried as the portfolio committee on what was happening during COVID for those young girls now who are at home and are no longer receiving anything. So what have you thought of as the department? And the whole value chain about starting from manufacturing, distribution, and so on. Whether our women are participating on it, you know, I heard that in Gauteng there was a problem. In fact, they were no longer even utilizing our cooperatives. Even the issue of school uniform, they are no longer. Cooperatives are no longer the one. Shoki, I think even yourself, you know, Gauteng was the best. But in fact, that budget was is there in the department. Those things are no longer happening. It's like now they are inviting big companies to tender for all those things that should be empowering our women. And I even said to the new MEC, no, it can't happen like that way. Why do they reverse good programs that were there in the department before? So I think as you do advocacy and monitoring, I think these are some of the things that you need to check to monitor as a department on what exactly, maybe even delegate some of your officials, you know, to monitor this, what is happening in the provinces. Because sometimes when you're in the national space, it's not easy for you to know exactly what is happening in all those provinces. Remember, you drafted also guidelines as a department on how they must deal with the issue of sanitary dignity packs. But we need to monitor, you know, on what is it that they are doing in provinces. Because if we leave it like that, I'm telling you, you will never reduce the level of poverty, will never empower our women economically, and they will find that all the things that are benefiting our women are not benefiting from them, our young people are not benefiting them from them, but those things will be benefiting other companies of big business when initially these things were created for our the disadvantaged communities to benefit from them. So I think this is what it's something that I think you as a department also, you must also check with Department of Social Development on some of the things that are happening there. Because I became very worried when I was talking to the MEC of Social Development that this thing can't be like this, can't be like that. So thank you very much. I will now hand over to, you know, this is what politically we are supposed to be doing as politicians, and we must check. You know, sometimes when we raise issues with you as officials, we are not fighting you, but all what we're doing, we want to show you the seriousness, because some of you in the department as officials, they still behave as things are normal, but things are not normal. So everybody's mentality, especially this time when you look at other big companies are closing down, and that tells you that it will impact negatively to our own people, especially women. We are the ones who most of the time feed our children, grow the children, feed the children. But also, I think it's high time that as South Africans, you know, looking at what is happening outside, in the 350 that the government is proposing for to assist the grant to assist our people, you know, some even you see men dressing in queues there going to apply. And I ask myself, I'm not talking about the one of but the one of child grant and so on, you know, that I'm talking about that one. You know, I was asking myself, men, these men, instead of them going to work for their children so that they can feed their children, they are dressing there for it child grant. And I was like, hey man, it's me who's going crazy now. But I think there are many things that are happening outside, and I'm sure together we need to look at these things and find a way. Even the programs,
You know, I think it's time that when we talk transformation and serious in dealing with the issues that are impacting negatively to our communities, especially this time, because you can see, all of us, you can see that life is no longer been the same like before. You know, it tells us that we need to change the way we do things. We need to change even what we are drafting as programs for department to change and better the lives of our people. Thank you very much. I think these are some of the things that were in my mind, and I can't sleep. I think of them every day, and when I see people and women crying every day, and I feel, which, you know what, it's like we're not doing enough. So those were my remarks, and the clarity seeking question. I can now hand over to our honorable members. Over to you, honorable members. I don't see, okay, let me go to this so that I can see who are the members want to speak. Okay, yeah, sure. Okay. Honorable Sheriff, Honorable Stay, Honorable Masondo.
Honorable.
Only four. And Pagamisano Banyane. Honorable Mkweba. Honorable Masiko. Okay, Honorable Sharif.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to you, the department, and to all the colleagues. I miss you guys so much, and I know that we have to keep this virtual, but I miss the human interaction. Yeah. I suppose human beings cannot live without other human beings and physical interaction, so I think I'm having a little bit of cabin fever, Chair, please forgive me. thank you to the department for your presentation. I only have a couple of questions. Chair, I want to just reiterate what you said in your opening remarks, and I did put my hand up, but I don't think you saw me, but it's okay. I just wanted to retell the story about an incident that I had to be called to the police station because the police officer didn't want to open a rape case because the rape happened a week before. Chairperson, the same survivor called me yesterday and said that she had to go to Ikaya Letembu in Johannesburg to give a statement to the police. And the police officer was not sensitized at all. And she asked the survivor, are you sure you want to open this case? You know, you've been friends. If he's a good man, we're not going to arrest him. If he's stable, you know, are you sure you want to ruin his life? And I was so shocked that a police officer was asking this to a survivor. And the police officer then said to the survivor, oh, the abuser, the rapist is here. Do you want to see him? Chairperson, in what life does a police officer ask the survivor if they want to see the rapist when giving a statement? Mm-hmm. She then says, no, I'm not comfortable seeing the rapist. I think I'll just leave. The police officer didn't take her statement. The police officer didn't take the evidence of a voice note where he, you know, where he apologizes and he concedes to what he's done. They say they don't want to look at him. They don't want, and when she left, the way the police officer called the rapist, she felt, when she left the office, she said to me, why does it feel like the police is taking the side of the rapist and taking my dignity away? And Chairperson, I didn't know how to answer her. I didn't know what to say because, you know, of course that's not how it should happen. That's not how, you know, the justice system works. And when these things happen, Chairperson, the first people I phone is the CGE. They have expertise, they have knowledge, they have research, always the CGE. And I never find myself having to call the department for any sort of assistance except when it comes to stats. And that to me is kind of problematic, because if we have a Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities that is only advocacy and only deals on an intellectual level and not repurposed and looking at how we can actually help women on the ground, real help, Chairperson, helping with our hands, then what I often seem to need to ask myself, what exactly is the role of this department in the bigger scheme of things? I want to thank them for the NSP. I think getting the NSP is a very big step, and I want to congratulate the department for getting that done and dusted. And also for presenting to the Women's Caucus, as well as having the training. And I think it's very good that we involve as many stakeholders as we can, because essentially this NSP doesn't belong to government. This NSP belongs to all the civil organizations and all the NGOs that have worked towards this goal. And I think to include them is very important. And I think, Chair, I'm going to echo what you said. Let's involve them more and more stakeholders and more NGOs and more civil organizations, because oftentimes we get told, yeah, government only wants to speak to a couple of NGOs and we feel left out. So let's be different this time. Let's open it completely as wide as we possibly can so that everybody feels included. I want to find out how far the monitoring and evaluation framework for the industry is, when that will be done, and can the committee get timelines and reference budget per department to assist us with our oversight. So we know that the NSP is going to be funded through various departments, so police, health, social development, whichever recommendation that it falls in which department. But I think for us as a portfolio committee, I think it's important for us to get that information so we can do oversight. So we can go to the Gauteng, to Tuzela Care Center and see if they are a resource. We can go to the police station and see if they have records. But we have to know what it is. We have to know what the budget is. We have to know the timelines, and we have to know what the framework, the monitoring evaluation framework looks like, so that we can do our job. Chairperson, I have asked for stats in, I think it was last week, Saturday, I had emailed for stats, and the department came back saying that they messaged police, and the police that hasn't reported the stats yet for this year. So the only stats we have is what was provided by the Minister for Lockdown and the stats from the call center. Now, this is a little bit concerning for me too, because it's July. And if we don't know how many GBV cases, if the department doesn't know how many rape cases, how many of these have been gone to court and been prosecuted, if we don't keep the number of the stats, we don't know what it actually looks like on the ground. And, you know, we hear, Chairperson, we hear about things every single day. Every day that comes, I get a phone call, I get a message, I get a WhatsApp on a case on GBV. Every single day. So the fact that we can't get a list of, and pull a list of stats per month, per province, whichever way you would need to desegregate it, that's problematic, Chairperson, for me. How do we monitor and evaluate implementations if we don't know what the stats are and what it looks like on the ground? So I just want to raise that with the department. Also, the wedge bill, Chair, you spoke about it. I just want to know which legislation is of high volume, and if we can get a list of those so that we can keep up to date with that information. You know, Chairperson, sometimes it feels like MPs don't get all the information. And committees don't get all the information, and it's very frustrating because we have to be, we are the ones who are accountable to our constituency and to the people in this country. So when they ask us this information and the department can't provide us with the information, it really does not look good for any of us. Chair, my last question and comment is about the surveys. I think the surveys would be good to help with the stats. Should have already been happening. But because it's going to be happening in the future, I welcome it. And I just want to find out what research has been done to date for this year. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Sheriff. Honorable Ste.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. And we welcome the presentation of the department. Number one, may the DG indicate when the adjustment APP targets will be achieved or will they be carried over to the following financial year? And then secondly, may the DG better provide the rationale for the retracting of funds in the advocacy of mainstreaming, as this program plays a vital role in raising awareness in the GBV and femicide. And then thirdly, which policy implementations were affected by the adjustments? And then lastly, often persons living with disabilities express sentiments of exclusion. Was there no other option than to the target of the National Disability Rights Missionary? And is there any evidence to support the proposed option?
Thank you very much, Honorable Steve. And maybe next time they must prepare a report on what is that social development is doing and whether they finalize their measure or what next time. And Honorable Masondo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to start by acknowledging the report from the department. My first question is just general, because you were raising it so many times. I just want to know, because last time the budget, our previous budget, we didn't include the persons with disabilities, because it was tackled by the social development department. So I just want to know, is it now covered in our department as was promised? The other one, I just want to know, because the chairperson has taken most of the effects, because it's just a driver, but you can't just stop her just to not to take everything. But tabling all bill of the bills to take place in 2021-2022 due to high volume of legislation for consideration. Which legislation is that? Because we are promised that even the legislation for the disability is going to be covered in this financial year. And the other one, I just want to know, in the program two, social transformation and economic empowerment, are the people with disabilities covered there because of this COVID-19? Because we know, even in our social development, they don't talk about the disability people when we are asking them about the food parcels and everything. They just say, no, we are under budget. We don't cover the one sector like disability people only. We just give councillors the list from the social development. So from there, they are going to tackle them. But they are just neglected of some sort. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Masondo. Honorable Ngobo.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to the department for the presentation. Chairperson, I also want to touch on the Disability Rights Bill. If my memory serves me well, when we're dealing with the department's budget votes, as the committee, we made the recommendation that the department should finalize this bill by the end of the current financial year. So I agree with you, Chairperson, that this bill must be treated as one of the top priorities for the department, because the concerns that the persons with disabilities are raising are valid and they must be addressed. Even if when you're looking at the programs of the department that are APP, the Rights of Persons with Disabilities program is the second least funded program. It can be. We can't be having persons with disabilities in this country facing challenges with discouraging dimensions, and yet the department doesn't prioritize them. So I think that they must move with speed to finalize this bill. Thanks, Chairperson.
Yeah. Thank you, Babu Ngobo. Honorable Mkweba. Mkike Outfoot. Honorable Masigo.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think one has been covered mostly by the issues that you raised after the presentation, as we welcome it. And I'm fully covered on the issue of the disability as well.
In terms of Program 3, Chairperson, on policy coordination and the issue of the stakeholder engagements session conducted through virtual means, I would like to link it to what the Deputy Minister had said in her introductory remarks when she spoke about the inequalities that are brought with the interventions that are run or in response of COVID-19 in terms of conducting these virtual platforms. And you'd find that sometimes there would be inequalities in terms of who would be able to access those virtual platforms. And I think that the department would also, in conducting these virtual platforms, would need to have a support for rural women or women who would ordinarily not have access to data, so that we are able to reach all the women from all the sectors of society, whether they are rich or they are poor. And I think that it's important. And you had also mentioned the fact, Chairperson, that there must be a form of a strategy that is used to ensure that we're able to reach all women. In terms of the four community mobilization initiatives which have been removed, I agree with you, Chairperson, in terms of that we should be able to look at other means of reaching or mobilizing communities. It could not necessarily be in a physical way, but because we are now in the times of the fourth industrial revolution and all other ways, maybe through SMSs or through media platforms, you know, television or radio, I think it's another way of dealing with community mobilization. And you know, one thing that the COVID has taught us is that we are doing things differently, or we are dealing with a new normal, as they have mentioned that. I think I'm covered, Honourable Chairperson, on all other issues that you had covered in your first input. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Masiko. Is there any other member who wants to speak?
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning, Honourable Members. In fact, Chair, I'm covered by Honourable Members, but I've got one question or clarification from the department. For example, Chair, my question is that how does the department monitor that the UIF reaches the affected parties? As some are women, are youth, and persons with disabilities. For example, they are in farms, they are in mines, they are in private companies. How does the department monitor that process? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Mgweba. Umamhlengwa, ukhona? Honorable Piri Ngembona, do you want to speak?
Yes, Chair.
Okay.
Just bear with me. Let me start by greeting and say all protocol observes with our officials from the department. Let me start by saying I won't be able to switch on my video based on the fact that I'm using my cell phone. I might be unable, and with the issue of connection, it's very bad. But Chairperson, I have a question, or maybe it must be based on the am I audible?
Yeah, continue.
Yes, I want to quote my question to the GBV issue, one on the basis of illegal immigrant. I'm based in Musina, which is 12 k's away from the border. I have witnessed a case where two illegal immigrants, a boyfriend and a girlfriend, had a fight. Unfortunately, the woman was highly pregnant, which was 9 months old. And when we called police in that scenario, they said they don't have, they can't open a case based on the fact that they are illegal immigrants. They don't have documents. So my question to the DM is that how do we assist illegal immigrants? Our fellow brothers and sisters, we are from African countries. We just came in South Africa illegally. It means when they have cases like this, they cannot get assistance or otherwise. Because even after that incident, 2 days after the woman gave birth to a baby boy, and if it was not because of the community that we had, the neighbor had their fighting, we had to intervene, and physically we took the law upon our hands. But hence the police are saying they can't assist or open a case based on the fact the person does not have a document. Then to my question is that if it happened, or if it's happening in other cases, then when you talk about gender-based violence or women who are killed by boyfriends and girlfriends, if the person is illegally came to the country, does the person counted on the state of South Africa or not? Because it means they don't have an assistant because they don't have a document. Secondly, on the issue of special schools, Chairperson, when I was doing my rounds or when I was doing my oversight, I went to Rivoni School for Blinds, and that school is not yet open. While we are saying all the schools must open, but the school, it seems like special schools are not given a priority. And I'm not sure whether it's this department together with education that must assist those schools to operate, because the COVID-19 regulation does not allow them to operate due to the issue of distance, social distancing, and also the accommodations. But while I was there, they gave me a report, and I tried to connect a few officials and DM of education, but I'm not getting any joy. Then also, that why am I bringing it to this department or to the portfolio is that I heard while they are busy talking about the adjustment, and it seems like you have already tampered with the adjustment of special people, then why are we not assisting them so that they can operate and reopen schools while we are saying everybody who's ordinary or who's able must go back to school? Can't we coin and have some funds that must go and assist the special schools to open and operate? Thanks, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much, Honorable Peter. I think all members have spoken now. We can now hand over to the department to respond.
Thank you, Chair. Would the DM wish to respond first, or shall I start?
DM?
I was just saying, please go ahead.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Thank you, Honourable Chair and members. I think it's very useful to for these issues to be raised as we are finalising the revised APP. In terms of the National Youth Policy, I want to respond, and then the other managers can also add. In terms of National Youth Policy, we will certainly look at that. I think that it's a very valid issues that you know, due to the lockdown restrictions, there was not sufficient time to make an input. But I will ask Emmanuel to speak further on that one, but it seems to be very valid issues. There have been a whole lot of issues raised on persons with disabilities and the need for us to work much more in a consistent and coherent way with the organizations in the sector. And we know that we do have the Presidential Working Group on persons with disabilities that plays a very, very critical role in relation to this kind of consultation. And we are certainly determined to ensure that the bill on the rights of persons with disabilities is fast-tracked. And I will ask that, and we have actually said that it is one of our priority areas, but I'll ask Mr. Benny Palime to also respond on that one. In terms of mass mobilization, look, some of these issues have had to be reduced due to the massive budget cut, but it doesn't mean that we must, you know, we are now, and some of it is also obviously to do with the restrictions, but I think that one fully agrees with the statements that were made by the Honourable Chairperson relating to the need to reach people in every corner of our country, whether it be deep in KwaZulu-Natal, and also that people need to be reached through their own languages. You know, I think that is a fundamental principle that is applicable to everything we do, that is applicable to the way in which we communicate with people. And I think that that will certainly be taken on board. I think we do, the one thing about media reach is that there are clear listenership figures. So those, they can say, look, this is the people in Limpopo listen to the Palapala, they listen to Tobela FM, and they listen to Mungana Lunene, etc. They can tell you that the people in KZN and in parts of Gauteng listen to Ukhozi FM. Whether you are in, you know, the deep part of KZN, or whether you are in, you know, an informal settlement in KZN. But I think the message is certainly well taken, that we need to communicate to people in their own languages. I think that's a fundamental constitutional right, and it's also a fundamental component of communication. So thank you, Honourable Chairperson. We will certainly take that on board, and particularly as we engage with GCIS. So our communicators are in daily meetings with GCIS, that is responsible for also working with us on communication relating to the pandemic, but also communication relating to areas such as GBV. Community radio stations as well are very, very important because they are even more geared towards communicating to people in local areas. And we will continue to work through the district development model, working with our stakeholders. We have also, for example, as part of the methods that we are looking into to reach people in all corners of our country, is to also work with the relevant government departments. So, for example, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has a lot of, they do a lot of work with women in rural areas. Now, we would want to work with that department to say, assist, work with us so that we do reach women in rural areas, that we don't just, also through the district development model, Department of Employment and Labor, we should be working with Department of Employment and Labor to work with trade unions, whether it be domestic workers, trade unions, whether it be trade unions of farm workers, so that we reach women, youth, and persons with disabilities in that way, because we won't reach everybody through ourselves, but in partnership with other civil society and other departments, we feel that we can improve our impact and our reach. But we will certainly take that on board. And the principle of addressing people in their own languages is very, very critical. So we will certainly take that on board. In terms of the Wedgie Bill, yes, that was one of the bills that lapsed in, I think it was the fourth administration. And yes, the department is certainly prioritizing that. It is a commitment made by the minister, so it is something which we will take very, very seriously. But we've also noted that we do need to look, there have been a number of changes since then, and we would need to also look at refining such the wedgie bill, although much of it is still very, very valid. But we regard that as a priority. We can no longer work in a situation where it's voluntary, whether institutions, private and public, adhere to the gender equality and so on. In terms of the NSP and the criteria, again, thank you, Honourable Chair. We've definitely taken that on board to ensure that my recollection is that that meeting had about 200 representatives. But certainly, if one organisation feels that they have been left out, then it means we're not doing enough. So we need to, and there are a number of coalitions now of NGOs and CSOs, so that we need to work with them to also broaden our reach so that nobody feels that they are not included. So we will certainly, we are constantly updating our stakeholder database, and we will continue to take that on board so that we know that everybody is invited and that people don't feel that we are just, that we are being selective, especially in critical areas of this nature. In terms of sanitary dignity, as part of the social impact work stream that we were part of, from the early, as soon as it was established, and it was, this issue of the shutting down of schools and the impact that would have on girls and that were receiving sanitary dignity products. One of the key interventions that we did make was to talk to social development to say that they needed to make sure that the food parcels that were being distributed to the poorest families needed to also include those sanitary dignity products, and that was done to some extent. But it is correct that it's something that was certainly did affect girls who had previously received free sanitary products. Even the top up of the grant, so the child support grant and even the COVID grant, the top up on the various grants was also aimed at quite rapidly putting additional cash into the hands of the poorest families. So it's not a direct delivery issue of sanitary dignity, but it was also a response to those basic needs of ensuring a rapid cash transfer to the poorest and the most vulnerable families, and including in relation to basic needs such as sanitary dignity and food and so on. DDG Steve will talk about the whole issue of how far we had come with the value chain of the sanitary dignity manufacturing, distribution, disposal and all of that. It's of deep concern to hear that Gauteng is no longer using cooperatives, because that is something that we were directly involved with. Even in the Premier's office at the time, we did training with women-owned cooperatives, as part of the Township Economy Revitalization Program. We had also said that a critical component of improving the procurement spend on township economies must be ensuring that women-owned cooperatives, women-owned businesses also benefit from that procurement spend. So it is a concern, and we appreciate that the Honourable Chair has highlighted this with us, because that's exactly the critical component that we are raising as part of our gender policy priorities. We have said on numerous occasions that until women are economically empowered, we will not get rid of gender-based violence. We will not be able to speak about gender equality. So we will certainly take that further. We cannot allow the the big companies and to displace women-owned enterprises. So we will certainly look into that further. I must also indicate that one of the instruments here is that we had a webinar, I think it was about a week ago, together with UN Women, to be able to consult with women-owned enterprises and other partners, government departments, to make an input into the procurement bill. The deadline for those inputs was the was 30th of June. As a department, we did make input. We know that many of the participants in that webinar also made inputs. Why that is important is that it should be going forward. It should become, for government to now shift from women-owned enterprises to those that are where women are not benefiting, should become increasingly difficult. So that pressure has to continue, and we will continue to ensure that we drive that in a major manner. The other comments I think from the Honourable Chair are certainly taken on board, and the need to constantly drive the agenda relating to women's economic inclusion, as well as the youth and disability rights. In terms of Member Sharif, thank you. Yes. I think this was also raised by the Honourable Chairperson, that where we have examples and we continued. One of the issues, if we look back to the November 2018 Presidential Summit on Gender-Based Violence and Femicide, there was a very, very clear message that from women survivors, women victims, women survivors, to say the criminal justice system is letting us down. That was one of the central messages that the government and all stakeholders had to hear and had to acknowledge. Now, I think through the ERAP and through the NSP and through the leadership from the presidency, leadership from parliament, leadership from the minister, the deputy minister, and so on, across even the IMC, we are starting to see interventions that are turning that around. But where you have a system that is that has not treated women well over a long period of time, that turnaround has to be pushed on every level, every single police station. And we do know that the training of police officers has commenced. And that's very, very critical. But it shouldn't just be training. It should also be a, consequence management. So the Khayelitsha case that the Honourable Chairperson referred to, where the rape victim was told to come back the next day, the police have taken action there. We need to follow it up. We need to check that it doesn't just disappear. And the same thing must happen with this case that Honourable Member Sharif has spoken about, because that again is unacceptable to treat a rape victim in that manner is completely unacceptable. And we know that this is a problem. We know that that even where a woman has been raped or abused, the cases that are even reported to police versus the actual criminal cases that are opened, there's a big difference between the two. So many women are somehow, whether it be through their families or through the police, are persuaded to withdraw charges. And that often then results in repeat offences and even femicide. So some of the femicide cases that have happened, when you look into the background to the case, you can see that this is not the person has been abused over a period of time. But, you know, us as families, as communities, and as the criminal justice system have often failed those people. But we would request that the, you know, every case should be reported and that we should be monitoring what happens with those cases. Now, in relation to what is the role of the department except for statistics, look, to be quite honest, it's not our role as a department to provide the police statistics, although obviously we do need to look at those, and this is an area that we are working on very closely. What is the role of the department? The role of the department is to drive the broader gender agenda to ensure that at a level of policy, research, monitoring, evaluation, advocacy, that we are doing that work. It is correct that we do not have the capacity as a department to be able to track every single case, but to be able to refer. So when we develop a referral pathway, it's clear what must happen to particular cases, what the procedures are, if there are complaints against the police, what should happen to those, not so that it doesn't disappear, because those police that need to have consequence management and so on. So, but the role of the department in relation to GBV has been to coordinate with all the partners so that to develop the multi-sectoral NSP. The department will now that the minister is chairing the interministerial committee, the role of the department is to ensure that we establish the national the National Council on GBVF, and to provide ensure that that council provides the leadership and direction in ensuring the implementation of the NSP. Part of the roles, correctly so identified, is to ensure the proper monitoring and evaluation of the NSP, to make sure that it's not just a document that now sits on our bookshelves, but to ensure that every single activity, every single output and outcome is indeed monitored, but also that it finds its way into the strategic plans and APPs of the departments. So if there are responsibilities of the SAPs to ensure that there is a reorientation and training of police members, they must set a target, and we must monitor that target, and it must be reported on a regular basis. If there is a need to amend the Domestic Violence Act, we would then need to monitor that, get the time frames, get the targets, and check that it is done. And one fully agrees with Member Sharif. That implementation plan, the timelines, and I think if you look at the booklet, the actual NSP booklet, it does include those responsibilities and activities. I've got it with me here. If you look at the back, and I'm hoping that the members have been also received copies of these, it does indicate all the key outputs, and so on, the responsible departments. So ideally, what should happen? This is the book. This is the one that I'm looking at, which I'm hoping that the members would have. What should then happen? And Member Sharif is correct that the portfolio committee, has a critical role to play in relation to information and oversight, and not, one would argue, not just this particular portfolio committee, but also other portfolio committees that exercise oversight over other departments should also be saying, what is this department doing in relation to gender-based violence and gender and youth development and disability rights? So certainly the issue of, how far are we with the M&E framework, I'll ask DDG Stee to come back to us. In terms of the whole issue of the statistics and the department, again, this is addressed through the National Strategic Plan. If you look at Pillar 6 is talking about information management and research. It's talking about the Deputy Minister also alluded to this, and the need to use evidence to improve program effectiveness. And that includes the coordination, sourcing, verification, analysis of data and statistics across government and civil society. And we know that there are various existing sources, but there's also a lot of gaps in terms of the availability of reliable data. But it's not just the availability of reliable data. It's also the interpretation of this data, as well as the streamlining and the coordination of that data, but then also saying, what does this data mean in terms of the way in which we are implementing? So there we fully agree on the importance of statistics and data. The NSP identifies the need for a GBVF clearinghouse that sources relevant data, and that the analysis and the synthesis of this is done to enable dissemination, monitoring, and evaluation. And once we have, we are working on this area with other departments, including through the IMC. And once we have made more progress on this, we would be happy to share it with the committee and obtain inputs of the committee. In terms of the wedgie bill and the issue of the high volume, we are not referring to the high volume of legislation of our department. We're talking about we were informed that there's a high volume of legislation of government in general that is being submitted to Parliament. We do not have that information ourselves, but I'm sure that it would be available through the parliamentary systems to say this is the legislation that is on the agenda of a Parliament in the coming year. But we have not stopped working on the wedgie bill. We are continuing to work on it and to look at how it should be amended from the version that was tabled at the end of the fourth administration. In terms of Member Hlongo, the issue of the targets, I think we have indicated the targets, some of which will be carried over into the following year, but we've also presented the targets that are going to be our commitment for the current year. And I'm not aware that we've retracted any funds from GBV. In fact, the allocation on the GBV, NSP, and so on, there's an amount of 5 million that had been budgeted for, and that is still there. And that money was the detailed breakdown of that. If we look at our response to a wide range of questions from the portfolio committee that we submitted on the 9th of June, you will see there's a detailed breakdown of that amount. It comes to 5 million, and that remains. We have not touched it. And it's about the establishment of the National Council on GBV. It's the issues, and that including advertisements for the selection of the candidates, but it's also the council itself, staff recruitment, compensation, and all of that, the M&E system, the launch of the council, and various other meetings. So that, just so that we clarify, that 5 million remains under that particular deliverable. The issue of the National Disability Rights Machinery, I'll ask Mr. Palima to speak to that. The issue of the Department of Social Development and the merger, the merger has been effective, if I got this question correctly. My apologies if I misheard it, but my understanding is that it was about the merger, and that was, it came into effect from the 1st of April, where we had the startup structure, which is the structure that is currently in place. And Mr. Shiviti will speak to that further if so required. Honourable Member Masondo, the issue of the disability rights budget, yes, it is with effect from the 1st of April 2020, the disability rights branch is now part of the Department of Women, Youth and Persons with Disabilities, and that includes the budget which the CFO has also covered. In terms of legislation, I think I have also addressed that. And we, as I say, we are prioritizing the Disability Rights Bill, and Mr. Palima can speak to that further. In terms of the question around, are people with disability covered through COVID-19? And the idea that the social development did not talk to issues of people with disabilities in food parcels. Again, our information is that, you know, persons with disability in poor households were certainly on the list of priorities for food distribution in that very, very critical early period. And the food parcels were distributed through the social development structures, and so on. Member, Honourable Member Ngobo, the Disability Rights Bill, yes. I'll allow Mr. Palima to speak to that. We do see it, just to reiterate, that we do see it as a priority, and you know, we will address that. Honourable Member Masiko, yes, okay, so the issue of stakeholder engagements for Program 3, I think we've certainly taken on board all the comments around trying to ensure or making sure that we do not entrench existing inequalities, you know, through only using virtual platforms. And that we reach all women, all sectors of society, rich or poor, and make sure that we reach all women, even those who are difficult to reach, you know, who not in who don't have access to data and so on. So that is must be an important part of our local mobilization strategy. But also, it you know, our approach to gender mainstreaming and even on GBV issues is that we have done resource packs and key messages and information for the district, the Champions Program, which the Deputy Minister spoke about. So that means that the messages on GBV will not only be through our Minister and our Deputy Minister, but every single Minister, every single Deputy Minister that goes into a local community is required to also spread the messages on GBV and so on, yeah, as well as on COVID. In terms of, yes, how does the department monitor that the UIF reaches affected parties, including women, youth and persons with disabilities, those on farms, mines, private companies? So one of the things we have done when we looked at the impact of COVID-19 on women, youth and persons with disabilities is that we also did a tracking system where we looked at all the major interventions. So let's say, for argument's sake, the UIF. And what we have been doing is, through the economic impact work streams, through the social impact work stream, we have then asked those work streams that as they get reports from the different, let's say, for argument's sake, from UIF, from Department of Employment and Labour, on the number of how many people have benefited from UIF, and how many, you know, we've said we want to know how many domestic workers have benefited from UIF, you know, how many women have benefited from UIF, and I'm sure we would also be able to then see if we can get sectoral breakdowns in terms of, you know, women, youth and persons with disabilities from the farms and the mining sectors and so on. The question of illegal immigrants, you know, again, that would seem to me to be a police, a concern about the police, how the police deal with certain issues, because, you know, regardless of whether a person is an illegal immigrant or not, if violence is committed against an individual in South Africa, if a woman is raped, then the police are supposed to ensure that a case is opened, whether or not the person is illegal or not. In terms of schools for learners with special needs, we are quite aware of this matter, and I'm going to ask Mr. Palima to speak to it. But we have engaged with the Department of Basic Education because the issue of schools for the blind not being properly catered for was raised with us, and we subsequently spoke to the Department of Education at the DG level. I personally spoke to the DG of the Department of Basic Education, and we had further engagements at the level of DDG in the department, and the DBE has developed guidelines in consultation with Blind SA, dealing with how these schools should be covering persons, blind persons, and so on. So those guidelines are underway, but we would need. I don't have facts at my fingertips right now as to exactly what has happened to date. I'll ask Mr. Palima if he would like to add in that regard. Chairperson, let me allow other members to address some of the questions that I have raised. Let's start with Emmanuel. Emmanuel, the issue of the National Youth Policy.
Thank you. And greetings to the Honourable Chairperson and other Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee and the Deputy Minister. So, just to quickly respond on the issue of consultations, we recently had, and apologies for not showing the video. As soon as I connect to the video, the sound quality immediately deteriorates, so apologies for that. Now, the point is, we hosted a webinar on the 29th of June, a couple of days ago, with stakeholders across the youth sector to look into the youth policy in the context of COVID-19, and also to get buy-in from those stakeholders on the inputs that have been received by all stakeholders, from all stakeholders since the consultation started in November of 2019. Now, Chairperson, what came out very clearly is that the consultations were thorough. The meeting noted that we consulted young people in their provinces in terms of physical sessions that were held in all 9 provinces. The youth policy was also gazetted on the 7th of February, and it has been in the public since then, where the public was able to raise inputs into the youth policy. The chairperson spoke about the issue of the request that we extend the timeline for the inputs. That was acceded to, chairperson. The date was extended from the 16th of March by another 8 weeks to end on the 28th of April of 2020. And in all of those inputs, in all of those rounds, we've received thousands of comments from the public. There were comments during the sessions. There were written comments that were written into the special email that was created. There were also comments by young people on social media platforms, on your Twitter, on the WhatsApp platforms that were the policy was shared on. And also, so generally there have been thousands and thousands of comments that were received by the unit on the youth policy. Now, the webinar that I spoke about acceded that where we have been lacking is communication with the people who've commented. For example, where the NYDA has written a comprehensive input, where stakeholders such as Youth Capital have written comprehensive inputs, there has not been a comprehensive response to say, we've received your inputs and this is how they've been integrated into the draft. So the webinar agreed that that will be an area that we will be focusing on before the policy can be taken to cabinet through the clusters for approval. So we are working on that particular approach of engaging the stakeholders to show them how we've integrated all of the comments that have been received. At this point, that is something that we're working on, and also making sure that the comments that have been received from the webinar itself are integrated into the National Youth Policy. So I think safe to say we note the comment that the chairperson has made about the issue of making sure that the policy is published the policy is published, and also so that the people are aware of where the policy is. I think we welcome the comment, but there has been comprehensive consultations that have taken place. Thank you, ADG.
Thank you very much, Emmanuel. Can we then ask, can we ask the other officials to put their video off until their turn to speak? Okay, I think the next question, DDG Steve. Okay, that just makes it easier if we can actually do this systematically. The next question was around the issue of persons with disabilities. And we would want to ask Mr. Palime to address the issues raised. Honourable Chair, Mr. Palime is with somebody else, but he should be able to. He has been sitting in. That's why we couldn't see his name on the list, but he is with Mr. Shiviti. So, Mr. Palima will respond to the issues of persons with disabilities. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Acting DG, Deputy Minister, Honourable Members, and Chairperson. There's a number of issues that were raised which I think are fairly urgent. Let me start with the issue of special schools. Chairperson, we've got about 464 special schools currently. Not all of them are open as we speak, but I take into consideration the matter that was raised by the Honourable Member that we will further engage with the Department of Basic Education on this matter. With regard to the guidelines, it's about 9 guidelines that we drafted with the Department of Basic Education. Those guidelines have now been taken on board by the Department of Basic Education and the Director of Special Needs Education, Inclusive Education, was speaking just recently on the radio on the matter. So it's been taken further. It's now in the system and it's certainly running, and we'll give feedback also to the chairperson and the honorable members on the matter. With regard to matters of social development, yes, the social impact work stream has taken into consideration all matters of persons with disabilities that we bring. That includes services, disability grants, food distribution, and so forth. And also, the Deputy Minister has taken an ad hoc project of ensuring that we are able to distribute sanitary dignity packs and other essentials to different centers in different places. And her project has taken off very well since she started in April, and she's still keeping us on our feet on that matter. On the issue of the disability rights bill, yes, I think this is an instruction from the portfolio committee. We are taking it as it is. Well, the only thing we're going to do is to only look at the APP and see where we can actually fit the new dates so that we can speed up the process. But the department put together a legal team which is going to assist us in drafting the bill, and we are certainly going to come back to this portfolio committee with something standing and which is reasonably acceptable to persons with disabilities. At this point, we have concluded the issue paper one for quarter one in terms of the legal requirement, and we've also concluded the project plan for the whole bill. So that process will definitely be fast-tracked, and we will definitely prioritize it. I will also speak to the Deputy Minister to get a proper advice and also proper instruction as to what to follow, and I'll take the matter up fairly urgently immediately after this meeting. With regard to the question of Rigoni Special School, yes, I believe that Chairperson, by the instruction of the Deputy Minister, will have to visit the school so that we can go and see what really happened. It's not only that school. We've been to Sibonile School for the Blind, just up here in Johannesburg, between Johannesburg and Alberton, just to see what is actually taking place. The matters of safety are there, but as the Honorable Member has said, the issue with blind people is that they depend on the sense of touch. And so they might end up touching surfaces, and children, if they play together, sometimes they bump into each other because they can't see, you know, as they play. But it's a matter that will definitely make sure that it becomes a matter of urgent. With regard to the final questioning of the bill itself, currently we've got the standing instruments such as the African Union Protocol and also the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities, as well as the White Paper. So what we are going to do, Chairperson, is to use all those instruments to factor into the bill so that it becomes something very enforceable by the courts. Also, we are reviewing Section 28 of the Equality Act to ensure that the amendment takes into consideration the matters of disability. But I must say, Chairperson, since the leadership of the Deputy Minister, disability has been taken very seriously in this department, and she's definitely keeping us on our feet working, because for her, it's a major priority, and we are certainly going to ensure that all of these matters are dealt with. With regard to the disability rights machinery, it's a process, Chairperson, just like the national gender machinery. However, we've decided that we will use the Presidential Working Group caucuses through the webinar. So we've had the first webinar with the public, where the minister spoke to the nation, and we will have the next webinar this month. But that includes Presidential Working Group members, government departments, business, as well as the other smaller sectoral groups that do not necessarily belong to the bigger disability rights sector movement. So we'll certainly address all of those things. And all of these matters will be addressed in the next meeting. And some of the matters have been are being actioned already as we speak. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you very much for that response. You are right, the Deputy Minister, even myself, I do engage her sometimes when the disability groups have spoken to me. I do engage with her. I know that she's moving. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Should we, DDG Steve, on the NSP and the sanitary dignity, over to you.
Thank you, ADG. Good morning or good day, Chairperson and members of the Portfolio Committee and the Deputy Minister. My response will follow from the responses of Mr. Padime. This sanitary dignity program and everything else that he alluded to is a clear demonstration of how we work in the department in an integrated and in a coordinated manner, what we would normally call intra-departmental service delivery. Because what then happens, the lead department, the lead unit, which is the SEP unit, does the outreach to the development partners, your UNFPA, WaterAid, and everybody else, and reach out to receive the donations. But also after that, work closely with the disability unit in identifying relevant sectors that are deserving, that should be receiving this, but how to work with their machineries that are existing in reaching out to persons with disabilities. Having said that, we extend it to the other unit of GTJS, the justice one, which then identifies sectors like your victim support centers, your shelters for abused women and all of that. So for me, it begins to show that when we talk mainstreaming, we begin at home before we take it externally. And we are also partnering with social development in this regard, and we are led by the Deputy Minister, which is a very good example of a program that demonstrates collaboration within the department itself. On the other issue of monitoring whether women are at the epicenter of the procurement value chain, we have actually intervened in Limpopo, where we realized that their specifications were actually not responsive to women, and actually the whole issue of financial exclusion was quite evident with their specification. Through our minister, we challenged it, wrote to the premier and everybody else, and that was withdrawn, and a new set of specifications were released that are much more inclusive for women, and we are looking forward to ensure that upon completion, at least women will be part of those that are benefiting in this area of work. On Member Sharif's matter, there are a few things that I would like to also consider putting forward to the criminal justice system, is that we revive the whole issue of the victim charter with the SAPS, but also the ministerial six-point plan that was launched by the minister, the former minister of SAPS, is still critical. We will take it up with the technical committee for the interministerial committee to make sure that both the victim charter and the ministerial six-point plan is revived, and it's more like a refresher course to SAPS. But ADG is correct. It's not only about training. We will reinforce and follow through as we monitor issues of consequence management. I need to indicate, Member Sharif, that we are doing a lot more in this area of monitoring. We actually have a national response team that we have formed comprising CJS members, all the critical stakeholders you can think of. Each and every case that we are aware of gets deposited in that session, that WhatsApp group, and we all provide that multi-sectoral response. I would request that we provide you with the number of either myself or Madam Esther, who is leading on GBV, even all the committee members, you can have our numbers, so that as and when you encounter all these cases in your constituencies, send it through, we deposit it in that national response task team, and we will be more than on the issue of, we are working in collaboration with the DPMP department to make sure that the very NSP, we develop an implementation framework and we tease out clear indicators for each department so that they start reporting against those indicators and know exactly what is it that they are being monitored for. As I'm talking to you, there is a workshop in this regard, and we are being supported by UNFPA, bringing in an additional with expertise on monitoring and evaluation to come in and enlist assistance in the department because we don't have enough capacity, but also to leave the field once the person has to leave, once the whole program is concluded on our side. It looks like I've dealt with all the issues that relate to NSC, and I will then hand over to the ABG and the other questions that we have not responded to, we will then be informed by the members. Looking out lastly to the rural communities and all, we have just met with the UNFPA, MTN, Google, SI, and so the discussed 155-day program of action are coming up with those messages and modalities of communicating. The one area that we raised, and I agree with you, Chairperson, a lot with your opening remarks, is that South Africa is very diverse. It's not only South Africans. We do have people residing in our country coming from Africa as a whole, but how we reach out to them and the language and the modality of communication is critical. We have proposed that we even work with embassies if need arise, so that every man living in South Africa can be reached out in a language that he or he can understand, and we think that's what we. That one we've raised sharply, we are considering. We are working with the creative industry as well. We will be bringing on board the department as an adult ESEC from that area of work. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, DG Shoki. I'm happy that at least even yourself now you are seeing the importance, you know. Thank you very much.
Chair, because just one more response from the department around the issue raised about research.
Oh, okay.
If I may ask Acting DDG Ranji Reddy to respond.
Yes.
Thank you.
Good day, Honourable Chairperson, the Deputy Minister and Honourable Members. I'm referring particularly to the question raised by Honourable Sharif on the research that has been done to date for this year. During the presentation, the ADG did allude to the research, but I'll just go very quickly through it. We did conduct a survey right at the beginning of the lockdown, which we used instruments. Given that we are in the lockdown, most of the research is restricted to desktops. So we did carry out the survey, we've analyzed it, and we produced a report, which we've also then added to the research report that we did on COVID-19 that the ADG spoke about. That was an initial research, but going forward, the unit is still concentrating on the impact of COVID-19 on women. So it's a greater research, more detailed. Currently, we are engaging with UN Women, and it's going to look at all the key aspects of public health, socioeconomic participation of women, communication, etc. And we are looking at all the various smaller studies that have been done with informal traders, etc., so that we can compile this impact study. This is an ongoing study, given that data is constantly changing. Of course, the challenge is getting the data and getting it disaggregated. We also are embarking, and in terms of the COVID, we also did a little bit of research that was very fast on alcohol related to GBV, and we submitted that to the department for use in their discussions at NASJOIN. But in terms of other research that we are beginning to embark on, there is a research that is currently being undertaken by the department together with DTIC, and small business, etc., working with UNIDO, a UN agency. It's called the Green Economy, and the research is looking at the economic empowerment of women in the green economy. It's a very interesting research. To date, we have managed to have the draft report, which we are currently commenting on. So that would be available in the course of the year, which would give opportunities for women to get into green economy jobs. And I think the current process at the moment is focusing on certain areas, but we've asked if not possible to widen. For example, in waste management, they were looking at plastics, and we were saying, but there's also paper recycling. So it's like that. It's a very interesting research. The other one that we were looking at embarking on is the one on equal pay for work of equal value. And there's work being done by an institute called the NBI. So we were looking at engaging, we are engaging with them actually, in terms of this particular research. What we would want to do is to look at how do we then come out with a model to actually monitor what is coming out in terms of the Employment Equity Commission and measuring equal pay for work of equal value. This is a critical research that might expand over 1 year. And the other area that we want to look at, we've started our literature survey, desktop literature survey, on the national prevalence survey on gender-based violence. And we're currently looking at best practices in the world, and is such a survey feasible in South Africa? It's got huge cost implications, but at this point in time, we have initiated that research, and that will be working together with the unit focusing on GBV, so that we can look at how do we put in place a national prevalence survey in the country in the next 2 years or so, pending the budget. And of course, we're doing a number of ad hoc research reports on the African Union ad hoc reports, the decade report. There was a SADC report on peace and peace And then there are the international reports, which we're also focusing on. So in a nutshell, Chair, there's a lot of work that is currently on the table in terms of research. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for that report. But also the other thing that you need to do, you know, in the previous weeks, I discovered that CGE itself, you know, there is inequality in terms of women representation in their senior management. You know, it's a boys choir, but they are expected to be monitoring other departments and the private sector. So I raised it with them. So
thank you, Chair.
Yes, checking women representation in other departments. You must also check even in the Chapter 9 institutions. I even asked them, you are supposed to be monitoring these things, and yourselves, you are not balanced.
No, Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Honourable Chair, so I believe that we have addressed the key issues raised.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. DM, do you want to say something? I don't know whether the DM can hear us or not. But thank you very much. Honourable members, do you want to make follow-up? Silence means consent. Thank you very much, DM and honorable members and acting DG and all your staff members. You know, today, the way you responded to us, it was very informative. And we thank you for the response and the things that you presented to us, acting DG, which were outstanding from the previous meeting. The other thing that we wanted to take to inform you about is that we are now with regards to NYDA, is that we're done with shortlisting. So what we have done now, we have submitted the qualifications to Human Resource Department for verification and the State Security to do the screening. So from the 27th to the 29th, we'll be doing the interviews. So by the end of July, hopefully we'll be done. End of July, first week of August, we'll be done with NYDA. And then, so all yours, then we'll have to push the presidency to appoint the board to start working so that they can't be without a board for more than 3 months. So we're trying our level best, though, you know, when we're dealing with these processes, you can't satisfy everybody. And out of 680 applications, we shortlisted 30. So people think this thing is easy. So we know that others will be happy, others will criticize us. The other thing that I've observed also, even other honorable members, you know, people were thinking that maybe you need to have a certain qualification, but the act, when the act is quiet, even us, we need to balance the list. So we have balanced the list according to what is best for NYDA, what we think is best for NYDA, but also in line with the act for NYDA. We have disabled people, geographical spread, demographics. We've considered a lot. We have even those that are highly qualified, those that are in the middle, those that are somewhere there. Because remember, NYDA is not servicing or serving only the interests of the ones that are highly qualified, you know. But others, they are writing to me as the chair, sending me CVs to say, but I'm a qualified lawyer, why am I not shortlisted? That tells you that even these people, they don't even know the act. What does the act say? What did we say in our advert? And they don't even check other CVs that are there, that we do have candidates who have graduated, who've got law degrees and so on. But
we have done a lot. It was not easy. Others are saying we'll petition, we'll take it from there. Others were responding to them as the portfolio, as the subcommittee. At least we have moved with the process, and we just wanted to inform you so that you know how far are we with that process. And now we'll be awaiting the CGE, because also they've advertised the post of the CEO. So we're looking forward that the next CEO, again, it will be a woman, because it's a boys management. So thank you very much. I don't know why do they close your video now, whether it's our IT or what, I don't know. But thank you very much, Acting DG and DM. I think if there's nothing else that you want to raise, our meeting is adjourned.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Chairperson.
It was a nice meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah.